Welcome to Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life. Each month, Galley Table Storytelling hosts a live event in the Kodiak community. Storytellers are given 7 minutes to tell a personal story related to a monthly theme. Tonight, we're going to hear those stories.
Our first storyteller is Erin Klum. Erin is originally from Tinley Park, Illinois, which is the suburb of Chicago. Erin has lived all over the country serving with the U.S. Coast Guard. Her move number 6 brought her here to Kodiak, to us, in summer 2016, where she currently serves aboard the Cutter Spar. She loves to run, hike, cook, and spend time with family and friends in Kodiak, due to our weather. She has added some indoor winter hobbies and enjoys bowling, puzzles, and game nights with friends. Please welcome Erin Klum.
There's a lot of you. Before I start, I want to give a quick shout out to my Spar family. I think they came out here a lot tonight. I'm not sure if they're here to support me or to get dirt on me, but I appreciate y'all being here. Like my bio said, I am from Chicago, so I've been known to talk pretty quickly. So if I start talking quickly, just give me the old pump brake symbol, and I'll slow it down. So I am from the south side of Chicago. I am Chicago Irish Catholic, which is basically synonymous for a big family. So I grew up with one older brother and 4 younger sisters. So my whole life has basically been a shenanigan. And before you go feeling bad for my brother, 1 boy, 5 girls, don't feel bad for him. He was the king of the castle. So my mom would openly admit, he's my oldest, he's my favorite, and he's my only boy. So we knew where we stood. The rest of us were constantly vying for positions 2 through 5. But we really knew the baby took number 2. So we were just trying not to be number 6. So my mom is sort of the instigator. She's always been the one playing the best pranks on all of us. And I call her 5 feet of fury. She sees that as quite the compliment, still. So she was always the one starting all the pranks. All the shenanigans were always her. So she kind of is the reason that we are the way we are. So to really explain, like my parents are total opposite. So we'll start with my mom, right? So she would do things that when we were lucky, she stayed home with us. So I think sometimes she just needed to amuse herself because she was home with 6 kids all day, all the time. So you might like open your lunch at school and find a sandwich cut into 64 pieces. or the local grocery store made this bread that was like a tie-dye, colorful loaf of bread. And she would very kindly offer to make my brother's sandwich, wrap it in foil so we couldn't see it, and then it'd be quite embarrassing when he opened it at the all-boys high school. So she grew up in a really Irish home, and her grandfather used to always say, "Jesus, Maddie, and Joseph." So as kids, she would always say, she'd replace my sister's name and say, "Bridget, Maddie, and Joseph," to the point that my sister thought her name was Bridget Mary Joseph Klum. And I'm not kidding, this went on for years and years and years, and we all knew that wasn't her name, but at a certain point, she was a kind of angsty teenager, and we're all like, "Nose goes, I'm not telling her." So she, honest to God, did not find out what her name was, real name was, no Joseph, until she applied for her first job at 17 and required her social security card. So the greatest prank my mom ever pulled on us was Good Friday. So like I said, I grew up in a Catholic house. So every year on Good Friday, my mom would send us to our rooms for silent reflection. We were being silent. So after lunch, she'd be like, "Okay, everybody, go to your rooms." And we go in there, and this was like a 3-hour silent reflection. We'd think about our sins for the year, think about what we're going to do this year, talk to God. And every year as we got older, it grew. So by the time I left for college, we were in our room silently for about 6 hours. So I went to college down in Tennessee, and my first year there, it's Good Friday, and I'm still at school. And I say to my friends at lunch, like, "I'm going to go back to my room. I got to do my silent reflection." And they go, "Erin, what are you talking about?" Not a lot of people down there are Catholic. So I go, "Well, I'm Catholic, my silent reflection, And my friend looks at me and goes, "I'm Catholic and I've never heard of this." So instantly I'm like, "Mom." So I get back to my dorm room, because this is before I had a cell phone, So I get back to my dorm room and I dial like all 27 numbers on my calling card, call home, and I'm like, "Good Friday, Mom, really?" And all she responds with is, I'll tell the others. So my dad, on the other hand, is completely the opposite. He's the only human being in the world that can read the Wall Street Journal comics and giggle. And I mean, like, belly laughs, giggle. He used to get the Barron's, which is a financial newspaper, every Saturday. We refer to that as the Bible, because he'd read it religiously every Saturday when it came. So while my mom is sort of instigating everything, you know, she's the one that's starting a water gun fight or telling us, or encouraging us, yeah, go ahead, go wake Nora up, who's the baby, in the middle of the night, tell her, school, 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 until she puts on her uniform at midnight and gets ready to go to the bus stop. My dad would sit in his chair and go, it's only funny until someone gets hurt. So when they say opposites attract, I would say I witnessed that every day for my entire life. And they're still together, 37 years later. Who knows how? Sorry, I lost my place there. Sorry, one second. Brain fart. So like I said, my dad is totally abhorred to my mom's little pranks, right? But there is one story of my life that kind of describes the craziness of growing up with six kids. And it all started one morning. We were having a big family breakfast. So my brother and I were home from college, and my parents had this rule. You had to go 2 hours or more away to college. So I think they were trying to get rid of us. And I would often say things to my mom, like, but mom, like, what if I get into Northwestern or like University of Chicago? And she'd be like, Aaron, don't be so silly. So we all went pretty far. So, you know, it was Christmas break, and she made this big breakfast to send us back to school because we wouldn't be home for a while. And we went pretty far. So we're sitting down to this big breakfast, and all of a sudden, my mom comes to the table and shouts, Colleen, Catherine, get your in that bathroom right now. What the heck is going on, right? So Colleen goes in the bathroom with my mom and gets yelled at for a couple of minutes, and then they come back out. And I'm still clueless. The three little ones are clueless. My brother turns to him and goes, I was wondering if you're blind or just stupid. I'm looking at Kevin. I'm like, what did I miss? Colleen has a hickey. So at this point, Colleen is a sophomore, and she's been dating a senior for about 6 months. She has a hickey. So I and my brother, immediately recognizing my parents are very upset, start egging them on.
Someone's getting grounded! You know, dump him!
You know, we're talking about how uncomfortable it's going to be for him to come to the door. In the meantime, my parents are yelling at us, and the three little ones are all going, what's a hickey? No clue, right? So at this point, all hell has basically broken loose. As this goes on, my dad's yelling at all of us, my mom's yelling at Colleen, and the girls are asking, what's a hickey? That is until Bridget, who's in about 7th grade at this point, walks up from her basement and reads the definition of a hickey from the A hickey is a bruise or bruise-like mark caused by the kissing or sucking of the skin, usually on the neck or arm. While biting might be part of giving a hickey, sucking is sufficient to burst small superficial blood vessels under the skin. Which immediately makes Nora, who's a baby at about 6, go, yeah! And Molly, who's in 8th grade and clearly naive about dating, go, you mean you've kissed him? And all hell breaks loose once again. I have no recollection of what punishment my sister actually got that day. I think being exposed in the middle of family breakfast and all of us talking about it for years and years, including here, she was not pleased by this, was more punishment than anyone my parents could have ever inflicted. When my parents first told us they were pregnant with child number 6, I was pretty angry. I was 13 and I knew where babies came from. So it was pretty uncomfortable. And also, anytime you go somewhere with 5 brothers and sisters, teenagers count you and they go, dang, they were busy. So I wasn't too pleased. Nowadays, we live in 5 different states and only get together about once a year. And every time that we do, it is a big joke, shenanigan-filled festival, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Thank you.
Slowly running the Pillar Mountain Race, traveling, and being with his family. Over the holidays, he and his whole family did a multi-day kayaking trip in the Sea of Cortez. Please welcome Pete.
Hello, Maybe they could turn, I could see everybody pretty well.
Let's turn the lights off more.
I like to go to the Dome. A couple years ago, I went there and I saw this long crate about 20, 30 feet long, and I went up there and looked at it, and I couldn't believe what I saw. It was an alligator, a real alligator, stuffed with foam and long, you know, but it had been a little bit picked over and some people had looked at it, so, but the minute I saw that, I knew I had to have it. So I got my tools out and I got most of it, at least half of it. And I got it in my truck and I took it home, and I knew my wife was coming home from work in a little bit, so I put it in the front door with tail sticking out a little bit. And then I kind of hit it around the corner and wait for it to come home. And, my wife hasn't disappointed me much in my 25 years, but this time, you know, you would think that if you came home in Kodiak and went up to your door and you saw a 20-foot alligator crawling in the door, that you might get a pretty good reaction. But all I heard was a few, ooh, ooh. And either she's way too used to me, or maybe, you know, took a breath or something. That's all we have. That's one of them. Another one is, jeez. My kid, I went to say goodnight to him once when he was about 7 years old. And I asked him how the day went. And he said, no, it went good, Dad. And I said, well, how did we go? And he says, well, it went good, but the coach told me that when I come next week, I need to wear a jock strap. Do you know what one of those is? And I thought, oh, jeez. And I thought, wow, do I know what one of those is? Because when I was in high school, I was on the basketball team, and you know how you warm up, and then they call your name, and you run out there, and the starting people. So I did that, and we were in the huddle, and we took off my sweatpants, and they called my name, and I forgot to put my shorts on. And if I was standing there, what do you do? I didn't tell my kid that. But I tried to sort of explain what it was like, you know, what a jock strap does, you know, kind of holds up these things, and whatever, and I did my best. And then he said, well, what size, Dad? I knew right then that this was like a turning point in his life. And so I kind of told him that, well, you know, when you start talking about your privates, and maybe someday later on in life you might need to know the size of something else that you use. Yeah. My standard answer is just stay large. And then I said to him, but you know, son, I gotta go fishing really early in the morning. So when your mom comes in and says goodnight to you, make sure you tell her that what the coach told you and what you need. And, you know, make sure he goes, yeah. I walked out and I stood next to the door and kind of listened to that. I was pretty excited. And he was saying, he said, oh, hi, Mom. And he tells her, and he says, well, I need to get a jock strap, Mom. And would you buy it? Because Dad's got to go fishing early in the morning. She says, oh, well, yeah, okay. And then I heard him say, and Mom, large. Oh, my son, he was 16, he turned 16, and he was a track runner. And a couple of his friends came to me and asked me if they could come over late at night and scare him when he was sleeping in bed, you know, 2 in the morning, blow air horns and whatever. So I said, sure, that sounds great to me. My life. So, but I thought about that, and then so I sat in the kitchen all night till like 3 in the morning until they finally came. And when they came, I heard him crawl in and go into the bedroom. But when they did that, I crawled out and went outside and hid in their car. Punching each other and so proud of themselves and scared him so bad, and his friends, and it's just Michael Parnell and Levi Thomas. And I hid back there, and I just couldn't wait. They crawled in the car and they were still talking, and I jumped up behind them, grabbed them both by the neck, and screamed really loud. It scared them so bad. He took a couple swings at me. Trying to punch me in the face right away. And that Levi Thomas, which I kind of thought about getting him because I scared that guy so bad. And he jumped up and he ran out of there. And he kept running. He's still running today. So.
Our next storyteller is Alana Denton. Alana has been a Kodiak resident for 2.5 years and currently works as a nurse at Kiana. She loves Jesus, going out of her way to stomp on especially crunchy-looking leaves in the fall. She washes and dries Ziploc saver baggies in her kitchen for reuse. It's so good. She regularly cooks unnecessarily large quantities of food. She joyfully jumps in puddles with her toddler friends. She sneezes all summer because she insists on bringing home wildflower bouquets after every mountain hike. And is currently sewing 130 feet of curtains to line the renovated bus that is about to be her home after she gets married this summer. That's so cool! So welcome to the stage, Alana.
So I need to start my story with a disclaimer, and the disclaimer is that anything illegal that happened with this story was neither intentional nor successful. So I moved to Kodiak in July of 2015, and about a week into living in Kodiak, went on an Audubon hike, and at that Audubon hike, met my friend Mandy. And we decided we liked each other and wanted to be friends, so we were going to plan a fishing adventure. So we decided on that following Saturday. We both prepared for this fishing adventure in our own ways. Mandy's from Michigan and her dad knows how to fish. And I'm from Southern Orange County, LA, California, and that's the most rural place I've ever lived. So Mandy called her dad. Hey dad, I'm going fishing this weekend, any tips? And her dad goes, what are you fishing for? And she's like, I don't know. Where are you going? I don't know. Sorry, I can't. I prepared my own way. On Friday night, went to the Kodiak Public Library and borrowed 3 books on fishing, including Fishing for Dummies, and read the whole book cover to cover. And so Saturday morning finds us at Walmart at 7 a.m., and we're getting our fishing licenses. And at this point, neither of us qualified for in-state licenses, so we went with the $20 one-day pass option. And at this point, I mean, I've been in Kodiak for like 2 weeks, and I keep hearing stories about, oh, this weekend I was over at this river, and I caught my limit, and I was over at this river, and I caught my limit, and so I'm like, yeah, $20 is going to fill my freezer. So, we're really ready to go. So we head down to Buskin. We have piles of gear that have been lent to us by kind people who have just met us, including Mindy's neighbor and another Audubon friend. And we get to the riverbank and get to work. So Mandy's fishing pole already has a hook on the line, and she puts bait on it and gets going. I get to work on the riverbank. I pull out Fishing for Dummies, and I teach myself how to tie a knot. Eventually, I get bait on this thing and start casting. Mandy gives me a few pointers, and I'm ready to go. We've been told, go to the Buskin and you'll be fine. It's July, there's pinks in the river, they bite anything. What they don't tell you is that pinks don't bite anything. And so I'm like casting, and there's all of these fish right in front of me. Like, you can see them, large fish in the river, and none of them want. What is on my line? I'm getting more and more frustrated and thinking, if I just inch closer to them, maybe they'll bite what I have on my line. They don't. And at some point, I get so frustrated that I, like, go back to the riverbank and see what's in my pile of gear, and I find a net that... that Mandy's neighbor had been like, oh, you might want this. So I, like, take this net, and I get in the river up to my waist, and I, like, hold the net out there and try and get something. A few days later, after telling this story, I learned that this was illegal. Thankfully, it didn't work. So, a little while later, I'm wet and cold and tired and discouraged, and I get out of the river, and we go home and regroup. Do some laundry, make some tea. We have 21 hours left on this fishing license. And I plan to fill my freezer. So, I say, Mandy, I hear there's some stocked lakes out the road. I've gone ice fishing in Glen Allen one time. I caught some trout there. I think there's trout in those rivers, probably. Let's go. And so we decided to go. So when we were at the Buskin, you know, the distance from our car to where we were fishing is like 400 feet. So we think, thinking we're about to encounter something pretty similar. Pack up two fishing poles, a tackle box, a tote bag with a big, like, picnic blanket in it, a lunch bag with a big packed lunch, two backpacks. And so we drive out the road to the first stopped lake sign that you see and come to Heitman. So we get out of our car, and we head that direction, and we head there, we keep heading, we keep going. Wet because we didn't prepare for rain. We're surprised that we're still walking. I lost one of my bog boots, like totally in the mud, like gone. We dug it out. And at this point, we get to the lake and really hope we don't catch anything because then we have to carry all the way. So eventually, we make it down to the bottom of the mountain. So at this point, Mandy doesn't know me well enough to tell me no yet. I think I have 12 hours left on this fishing. I'm really determined to fill my freezer. So I tell Mandy, okay, Mandy, I have learned so much about fishing today. I can tie a knot, I can put bait on a hook, I can cast. I know that if we just go to the back of the Buskin where I saw the fish, we can catch more. Or catch something. Pinks to find anything. And so we head back. And Mandy, at this point, is really tired of fishing. And so she decides she's going to have a phone call in the riverbank, and then I'll get going. And I said, just give me 20 minutes. I know I can do it. So 2 hours later, I make friends on this river. I have several groups of friends. I have the two guys across the river that are like getting something with every cast that I keep hooking lines with. And then I have his dad and son next to me, and I've been over, eavesdropping because, you know, dad's giving son fishing advice. And so So these guys across the river get ready to go, and in a very generous and kind act of you have no idea what you're doing, they give me two of their fish. I'm thankful, but I also am acutely aware of the fact that I just received three fish. I can't take these home unless I've reeled something in. So I keep going. And at some point, I have something on the line. Something is on the line. I reel it in. Dad on my left is giving me advice on how to reel this in. I get it in, and I am thrilled. I have 14 hours of fishing later, and I have something to show for it. Dad on my left tells me I have to throw it back. And I think, what are you talking about? This is 14 hours. This is the first thing that's been on my line. He says, well, it's hooked in the tail. You got to hook it in the mouth.
Here in Kodiak. I was on my way to the airport and I was a little late, so they wouldn't let me bring my luggage, so I had to just shove a few pairs of clothes in my backpack, and I just had one pair of shoes that I brought. And when I made it to Montana, which is where I was going to, my cousin called me. He's like, hey man, you wanna go to the hill climb? And I'm like, well, what's the hill climb? He's like, it's all right, man. We're going, all right? Just don't worry about it. And so we're driving there in his truck, and we get there, and I see these motorcycles flying up this giant hill, and I'm like, oh, cool, we're gonna watch these motorcycles. And then he turns, and we're going up the hill. We're going on to the top of the hill and around, and he's like, I'm like, what are we doing on the top, man? He's like, well, we're gonna catch them. And I'm like, what do you mean we're gonna catch them? He's like, well, when they flip over, and they start rolling down the hill, we're gonna jump on them. I'm like, jump on them? And he's like, all right, it's fine. Today, you can just watch me, and tomorrow, you can help. I was like, all right, that sounds good. And I mean, have you ever looked at someone and you're just like, I can't believe you're a real person. Like, I grew up in Kodiak, so I'm just watching things on YouTube, like, whoa. That's cool, but you get somewhere to a new place, and you're like, that person actually exists. And there's these people, and it was hilarious. They knew the exhaust sounds of every motorcycle ever. They're like, oh man, that's the street bike engine that goes. They did it. They made the sound. Oh, that's the 450. The snowmobile engine goes. It was hilarious. It was. And they didn't even think it was weird. They were completely fine with it. I was like, oh yeah, man, I know that one. It was hilarious. So, I went home, and the next day we came back, and so now it's time for me to catch bikes. And so, my cousin has to give me the safety talk, so he says, all right, there's one rule. If a bike is coming at you, don't move. And I'm thinking, what do you mean? He's like, well, if you think about it, you go this way, and the bike comes this way, you're done, man. You go this way, and the bike comes this way, you're done, man. I'm like, dude, if you stand where the bike is coming, and they don't move, it's also going to hit you. He's like, just trust me, man. I've been doing this for a long time. All right, I'll trust you. And so the hill is so steep that you have to, like, dig yourself a little hole so that you can sit. You know, you sit in your little hole. And I got my cousin right here. And there's another bike coming, and it's kind of the bigger bike section. And, you know, the trail is, like, maybe, like a few feet from us. And this guy starts getting off course. And he's coming towards us. And I'm like, all right, remember your journey. I got this. And he's coming at me, and I'm like, in what kind of world am I gonna not listen to my instincts? When there's a 400-pound motorcycle coming straight at me, and I'm gonna stand here. So I, of course, jump out of the way, and he stands there and gets a face full of dirt from the motorcycle. It goes right past where I was, and then it was like it was a near miss accident. He had to have the safety top of me. He brings me over and says, come here, man. Remember what I told you? Don't move. So what you did was you moved. What you were supposed to do is not move. And I was like, look, it went, that's right where I was sitting. He's like, I said, don't move. You moved. Just get out of here, man. It was hilarious. So, I mean, some people, right? But, so the last event is that it's called the side-by-side. It's two motorcycles, and they go up the mountain, the hill at the same time, and they open this place off just for the side-by-side race, and it's like just basically straight up. And almost every time the two people go up, they get right to the top. You know, their momentum stops, and they just roll down the mountain. Like, and you gotta jump on them, you know, like, so they don't fall down. It was really crazy. After it was over, I had basically ruined my shoes, which, as you remember, were the only pair I had. And I still had like a month left in Montana. So I proceeded to go to every shoe store in Montana, and when I was in Anchorage just a few days ago, I got these boots, and the Red Wing guy said that I have off-the-charts wide feet, the widest feet he's ever seen. The Red Wing guy! There's three pairs of boots in the state of Alaska that fit on my feet. So, this was before that, so I was going to every store, and you know, it's hot, it's like 100 degrees in Montana, so I'm running around with I don't have any shoes on. I run around my hand in my socks. Like, I get into the store and I was just so defeated by the end. I walked in and I said, can you just find a pair of shoes on my feet? Just need something. And they're like, what kind of shoes do you want? Or, I mean, just anything. All the price ranges. Just any shoe of all the shoes. They're like, what size? I'm like, I don't know, C-line flipper size. You know what I mean? Anything wide enough to, if it fits a C-line flipper, it'll fit on these things here. So, and finally I got a pair of shoes. And I said, 10 shoes, I love you. I miss, when you don't have a good pair of shoes, you just appreciate them so much. So that's why, whenever you go to Montana, always remember to bring an extra pair of shoes.
All right. Ice Queen. And I got this nickname because I play a game that's called icing. And icing is a game of creativity and sabotage, wherein you try to booby trap usually your friends, but sometimes to strangers, with a Smirnoff Ice. And Smirnoff Ice is a sweet, highly carbonated, dreadful beverage. And when the person finds the Smirnoff Ice that you have so cleverly conned them into discovering, they must pay homage to you, take a knee, and chug it until it is finished. And the proper etiquette for anyone in the surrounding area is to surround the victim and chant both in encouragement and in humiliation, ice, 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 ice. So who here has played this game before? We've got a couple of people. Some people have played this with me, okay? So for those who haven't, a really good example of high quality icing was perpetrated by my friend Carl. And Carl came from Fairbanks and he went down to Palmer to visit my friend Tom. And Tom is like the Obi-Wan Kenobi of icing. He taught me everything that I know. And Carl, before he left Tom's house, went into Tom's bathroom and he unhooked the chain from his toilet. And he duct taped an ice to the inside of the toilet tank, knowing full well that when Tom flushed the toilet the next time and he had to fix the toilet, he would see the ice and bam, ice, 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 ice. So Carl leaves, Tom goes to the bathroom, obviously the toilet doesn't work, but Tom, as I said, is a Jedi. So he knew, as a higher level player of the game, that you can play defense on ice by going and arming yourself with an ice yourself. So he ran to the fridge, got an ice, ran to the toilet, opened it, and took a picture. Like, his wife took a picture and sent it to Carl, like, ha-ha, I got you. So Tom actually came and visited me in Kodiak this summer, and true to Tom form, he booby-trapped me with an entire six-pack of ice all over my house. So he put one in my cleats. He put one in my golf bag. He put one in my trash can. So when I took my trash out a couple days later, I took the bag out and there was an ice at the bottom of my trash can. And I think the best one that he did was I was in my garden this fall and I was going through my potatoes and there was a Smirnoff in my potatoes. Because we play Ultimate Frisbee, and when we go to tournaments, icing is as much a part of the culture as the frisbee itself. So one of the icings that I personally am most proud of, which is my crowning achievement as an ice queen, was at this tournament in Oahu, and I had spent the lion's share of my time trying to earn this misery happy ending prize from one of the teams, because who doesn't like a happy ending, right? They told no one what it was, and I worked so hard, and when I finally got it, I was a little disappointed, because as it turns out, it was just a fleshlight. So if you don't know what a fleshlight is, picture something about the size and shape of a Coke can. Something soft and fleshy with two holes on each end. Something that a male might use to provide himself with a pleasant sensory experience. Yeah, okay, so that's what I won. And I was a little disappointed, but not to be discouraged. My co-conspirators and I were trying to figure out a way to have fun with this thing. So naturally, we said, well, we have to ice people with it. So what we did is we took the ice and we put it over the top, kind of like a little koozie. and I put it in a fanny pack. So I had the bottle in the fanny pack so that the little fleshy part was on the outside. And I did laps around this 200-person party. And you would not believe the number of people who just jumped at the chance to stick their finger in this thing. Like, it was unbelievable. They were, like, in there rolling around, and then they bottomed out on top of the Smirnoff, and I would unzip my fanny pack, and their face would just melt. They're like, no way! Oh, my God! At least once, and so everyone's on guard. So it's miraculous that I got anyone. I was like, there's no way this is gonna work. and it worked. And not only did it worked 12 times. In an hour. But I don't know if you've ever iced anyone, for those of you who play this game before, typically it's like one or two times the party. And I got 12 people in an hour, so that was pretty exciting. But my last icing story is my favorite, because it's about my Padawan learner. I had a pupil back in July of 2015. There were a bunch of Swedes that came and visited and stayed at my house. And they were here for 4th of July, so we took them to the American River. We did all the American things. We took them on four-wheelers, and we went fishing at the Saltry, and saw bears and eagles, and they were like, this is great! So we are at camp, and we're doing camp things, and one of them, Linus comes up to me, and he gets down on one knee, and he presents me, very politely, with an ice. He presented it to me, and I look at him, and at first I'm confused, I'm like, what is he doing? I don't think he knows what he's doing. And then I realize, I'm like, oh my God, we had this moment where we are culturally bonded, because he likes icing people, and I like icing people, and this is America, so I didn't teach him the American way to ice people. So I taught Linus the American way to ice people, and he was so excited and so good at it. It was like a fledgling bird soaring from the nest. I watched him. He was relentless. He was innovative. What I didn't anticipate was his long game. So this fall, when I was in my garden and I was cleaning out one of my rhubarb beds, I was around and I saw the corner of this hard surface, and I started moving the dirt aside. And I'm like, clearing it away. I'm realizing what it is. I'm having this flashback of Linus in my garden. And I'm like, oh my gosh, Linus iced me 2.5 years later. 2.5 years later. So I am so proud. I'm so proud of this moment. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so proud. So at that time, the ice had been in the ground for about 2.5 years. And it was very muddy, and I never actually drank it. If I can ask your help, I would like to honor Linus for the monumental achievement of icing me 2.5 years later. And I would like to take this in front of you all so that I can be humiliated in front of this entire world. Your job is to chant ice, 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 ice. Okay. Thank you. And here's to you, Linus.
His freelance education included going to college at night for 2 semesters of gourmet cooking. On his junior year summer vacation, he lived in a dairy farm milking 84 cows twice a day and making a bunch of hay. For a senior project, he took what he learned on the farm and designed a prototype for the sprouted barley fodder system, now considered a revolution in animal feeding. That's pretty impressive. From there, he graduated from Swissvale Area High School, where his main course of study was Let Me Out of Here. On July 5th that summer, Ken Gormley and Paul simultaneously set a Guinness Book of World Records for carrying a brick weighing 8¾ pounds for 43.57 miles.
What?
This is an interesting person, so please welcome Paul.
I'd like to get the apologies out of the way right now because I haven't done anything, nothing with a microphone ever. But, let's see, where am I at? I just drank a tomato plank and I saw all these faces off on the side. But I'm one of 10 kids. We have two parents, of course. And let me get over this blank here.
Tell us how to say your last name.
My last name is Schweibens, but I go by the Paul variety. Because there were so many Pauls around, I just incorporated all of them and just said variety, as opposed to Paul, the guy who's head of Ernest Solly's into Henry's, or Paul, the electrician, or Paul, the carpenter from Seward. But back to the story, man. Variety. Story is, man, I wish I had my notes. Okay,
Shenanigans.
Yes, that doesn't help. Okay. Lar, she blows. When I was a kid, now you gotta help me out here, please. You gotta try to imagine me being a little kid, okay, with short hair because my dad cut our hair twice a year, and he cut it so close that you could smell your brains, not that you used to when you were a little kid. So what we did was, being one of, like, the family went like Mary, Donna, Cleo, Paul, and Treese, Paul, John, Jermaine, Nanette, Elizabeth. And then we lost a kid, didn't make the squeeze right here, and so mom was wet and she took in a foster kid. But she needed to do that with already five kids in real diapers, you know, in wringer washers. So, anyway, you didn't have any scoots and you didn't have any toys. So what we would do, my little brother and myself, and then we had eight sisters if you didn't add that all up, you know, we'd play Joe because it was a cost-effective way of having fun. So we'd go like play underneath the table, dining room table, it was a really cool place, and you'd get down there and say, hey Joe, let's go play Dad's end of the table. You know? So he'd say, yeah, Joe, let's go play down there at Dad's end of the table. So we go crawl down underneath Dad's end of the table and we just say, hey, you know, this is cool, but let's go in the living room and see what's happening over there. Okay, we just called each other Joe and we just said, hey Joe, you know, and then that was our fun. You know, we just called each other Joe because we had a cool uncle named Joe. Okay? So needless to say, that was getting a little bit old. And we went in the living room and there was this movie on. And it was like Moby Dick, which is really cool for some little kids there. And these guys were really ticked off at this whale. They were like following him around and trying to stick him. You know? Literally put the stick to him. You know, and he had all these people like really ticked off at him. For whatever reason, we didn't know. We were just little kids. And then there was this guy and he spotted him after chasing him around the plant, said, hey! Arr, he blows! You know? And so we thought, man, we could like switch that out for the play of Joe to Arr, he blows. So we're little kids, and we got a dog, and the dog's name was Thunder, and we'd see Thunder, and we go, Thunder, Arr, he blows! You know? And it was better than Joe. We could point at people and say stuff, you know? So that was a step up. So, mom says, hey, kids, go outside, because it's a beautiful day, and play Bar the Bros outside. So, we did what mom said, one of 10 kids, you do what mom says. So we went outside,
And there goes the Eggman. We had eggs delivered to the house, and we go, there's the Eggman! Arr, he blows! You know, and we go out in the alley, and we look in the alley and say, hey, garbage man! Arr, he blows! And there was three then, so we got a bunch of their arr, he blows in there. You know? And then the milkman came, and we put the arr, he blows to the milkman. You know, things were working like really good. And then we see my sister, because that kid didn't make it in the squeeze, you know, she was like in junior high school. And we see my sister Terry, and we go, Harry, oh, she blows! And she went berserk! I mean berserk! We never seen anybody go this berserk before. You know, she was up in the air, moving arms around like this, and then she goes, she comes back down and she looks at us, starts chasing us. And getting chased when you're a little kid is as much fun as you can have. You know? Especially because he was really ticked off, so he was chasing us like halfway around the block. And we weren't even allowed around the block yet. So, this is really cool, you know? And so, whenever she got tired and decided to go back to her friends, we'd say, man, she's done, quit chasing us. So we'd go back with the, go to the store and say, oh, she blows again, she, y'all. Break out again and then chase us more. We like got the whole way around the block. But we had the excuse of we were being chased. So, no, we're on the case. This is cool. And then I realized years later, but we didn't know what made her so mad. You know? But she really got offended and that pork really lived for fun for a real long time. You know? And after I was thinking about this story here, I got to call my sister Terry up and say, hey, did you ever really regret going berserk when we said, bar, she blows like the first time and you had to live with that for until we forgot about it? So that's what I'm doing this week. Thank you.
I'm going to introduce Marianne Conro. This is Marianne Conro's fourth time sharing at Gala Tables. Interesting is that she's lived in Kodiak for 4 years. She moved here from Kodiak from the Southeast Alaskan community of Cake, where she lived and taught elementary school for almost 34 years. In Cake, she lived in a float house. She is so cool, you guys. Marianne was born and raised in Washington State. She has 2 children and 5 grandgirls. Her son, Ben, and daughter-in-law, Stephanie, live here in Kodiak, and her daughter, Karen, and family live in Washington. You can find Marianne volunteering at the library, having tea with friends, walking Kodiak beaches and trails, playing with her camera, writing letters, listening to music, and playing with her granddaughters, who are lucky enough to live right next door to their grandma. Marianne is part Irish, which makes a tale of shenanigans. So appropriate for telling this evening. Welcome, Marianne Conner.
Boom, boom, made it right to be crazy. Boom, boom, made it right to be crazy. Silly and foolish all day long. Boom, boom, made it right to be crazy. On the eve of my 50th birthday, my husband and I were having dinner at an Outback Steakhouse near the Seattle airport and saw dinner. We were planning a birthday celebration and had gotten there early and were waiting for my son, Ben, my daughter Karen, and their friend Rob. When I noticed them coming in the door of the restaurant, I noticed they had someone with them that I didn't recognize. Then I realized Ben was carrying this person who had on no clothes except really ugly Speedos and quite the smile on his face. This was my first introduction to Mr. Stud. Mr. Stud was a life-size blow-up chick toy. Mr. Stud sat with us during dinner that evening. The conversation was rather light, but his smile was a mile long. The next day, we traveled back to Alaska, and Mr. Stubb was in our checked baggage. And I'm sure that wasn't the first or last time he traveled flat. When we got back to Alaska, it was our summer, continuing our summer vacation, and we'd invite friends from Washington and Alaska, friends and family, to join us at some remote property we owned called Windham Bay. And so it's about a two-hour boat ride, and once we got to Windham Bay, we were opening up our cabin that's there, setting up camp, and Mr. Stud, you could tell right away that he was really pumped up for this wilderness adventure. People would notice him on the trails, they'd notice him maybe hanging in a tree, sitting by the sauna or the campfire, and frequently people would find him in their bed. Now, Windham Bay was a mining community, a lot of mining. At one time, there was a population of 800 people, and there was even a post office there until 1958. Now, the property we owned had a mining area that, well, there was a tunnel that they had drilled through a hillside, and it was a hard rock tunnel, and they had drilled it to divert a creek so that once it went through this tunnel that was 1,000 feet long, on the other end there was quite the waterfall, and they could divert that water into a long tom sluice to recover the gold. Well, over the years, this tunnel, the upper end of it, the mouth of the tunnel, had become plugged. The water still went through it, but it needed some care. And in fact, the creek, at times of a lot of rain, could be a lake instead of a creek. So anyway, we spent several days pulling things out of the tunnel. We built huge bonfires, and we had chainsaws, and we were clearing out the mouth of the tunnel. It took us several days. When we got done, we were sitting around going, wow, wouldn't this be the most coolest extreme sport? I mean, people would pay a lot of money to come and do the tunnel at Windham Bay. Well, Mr. Stud had a smile on his face. And he was ready for the ultimate challenge. So we took our group, and some of us were at the bottom of the waterfall, and some of us were the mouth of the tunnel. We had walkie-talkies so we could talk to each other. And the waterfall group had a stopwatch so we could even see how long it took them. So Mr. Stud went through the tunnel, and less than 3 minutes later, he came shooting out over the waterfall down into the pool below. He didn't have a scratch on him, no bumps and bruises, and he was still inflated. That night, we had a celebration around our campfire. We were drinking adult beverages and telling stories. Mr. Stud was quite the socializer that evening. It was early on that we noticed the first note that was taped to his chest. And the note said, "Today I did the tunnel, tonight I'm doing Patty." That said, yesterday I did Mike, tonight I'm doing Linda. But I want to tell you, it didn't stop. We noticed that someone had taped something to his man parts. And it was this little stick like a huckleberry branch, and it was taped there. I think they used duct tape. But there was a note by there that said, "You think this looks small? You should see Uncle Bobby's." Well, the next day we got ready and closed things up and got ready to go back to Cape. And Mr. Stud was once again wandering around smiling. And we got in the boat ready to take off to go back home. And Mr. Stud was nowhere to be seen. We realized he had so much fun at Windham Bay that he was going to stay there. And he did, over several winters and summers. One summer, we came back to Windham Bay, and Mr. Stud was propped up against our weather station. Our weather station was three poles that were like a tripod with a string that came down with a rock hanging on it. And we made a sign there that said, "If the rock is moving, it's windy. If the rock is wet, it's rain. If the rock is white, it's snowing. If the rock is gone, there was a tornado," and some other things. Someone had taken a Sharpie pen and added one more line, and the line said,
I don't know where I am, but Mr. Stead is really a good time. Another summer, we went back, and we could tell that Mr. Stead was just not himself. He lost a lot of weight. And so to speak, he just couldn't keep it up. So we realized that we had to kind of let him go, rest in peace, and win to May, and that's what we did. Now, I moved to Kodiak 4 years ago, and I was newly widowed. And one of my first gatherings here with family and friends was a New Year's Eve bonfire with friends and family. And my son, Ben, and his wife, Stephanie, and two of my granddaughters, they had left early that evening, or, you know, they left before me. And anyway, Ben texted me, and he said, Mom, do you need a ride home? Well, I texted Ben, while I was sitting by the bonfire, texted Ben and said, I don't know where I am, but everybody says I'm having a good time. And I think that's when the silliness started about my boyfriend. And I realized, you know, I was like, well, maybe I'll meet a pilot, or maybe a cowboy, or maybe a biker, maybe a sailor. And just recently was a freshman. But then gathering all and remembering the story so well, I realized that I don't need a boyfriend. I need to revitalize Mr. Stud. Because Mr. Stud is always a little bit silly and a lot foolish and always crazy. Boom, boom.
Galley Table Storytelling is made possible through a partnership with the Kodiak Arts Council and Kodiak Public Broadcasting Corporation. Visit us online at galleytables.com to find the date and location of the next live storytelling event. You can also browse our archives and listen to past stories or sign up to be a storyteller. Galley Tables, sharing stories and sharing life.